Welcome to ETFs in Context. I'm Helen Hayes, head of iShares Canada. I'm here to guide you through the world of exchange-traded funds, or ETFs. Whether you're a financial advisor sourcing new tools to help your clients meet their financial goals, or a new investor, you might be wondering the role of different ETFs and how to navigate this world of choice. But not all ETFs are created equal. Some are more suitable for long-term investors, while others enable investors to be more opportunistic and express a short-term view on the market based on their risk appetite. Some are designed to capture the returns of a specific market, sector, or factor, while others are more broad and balanced. How do you know which ones to choose? That's where core ETFs come in. In this podcast, we'll explore the different types of core ETFs, how they work, and how they fit into your portfolio. Today, I'm joined by Hale Yang, iShares Canada, Head of Product Content at BlackRock, to discuss the role of core ETFs in a portfolio. Hi, Hale. So good to have you today. How are you?
Hi, Helen. Good, thanks. Thanks for having me on.
Hale, to start, how does BlackRock define a core ETF?
So we define core ETFs as broadly diversified, market cap weighted, index tracking ETFs delivered at low cost. When you think about the evolution of the ETF industry, core ETFs are where they started. So when you think about the first ETFs ever launched, they were funds that would track things like the S&P 500 index,
right,
the TSX Composite Index, or the FTSE Universe Bond Index. This is what we mean by kind of these broadly diversified, low-cost core ETFs. And as we'll explore, I think, throughout this podcast, they have remained a very, very relevant category of ETFs, and for good reason.
Can you speak now about the journey and the evolution of ETFs in Canada? I think we've seen significant inflows into core year-to-date and just in general.
Yeah, so I think I'd actually take a sort of a multi-decade view on that. Like I said, core ETFs are where ETFs started. And in the subsequent, call it 1 to 2 decades, we have seen a massive proliferation of product choice in ETFs.
Right.
We have over 1,400 listings in Canada today. And yet with, you know, and so any flavor of ETF you want, we now have dividends, factors, sustainable, thematic, multi-asset, covered call, crypto, it all exists now. Despite all that growth in product choice, which is great, what we see is that about half or almost half of the over $400 billion of AUM in Canadian ETFs still sits in this version 1.0 type of ETF.
That's amazing.
ETF. Yeah. And so, in numbers, they represent about 10% of the number of ETFs, and yet sitting inside them is about half the AUM of the industry. And that speaks to kind of this enduring benefits that these ETFs have provided to investors of all sizes.
Yeah. And Hale, when we think about the benefits and when someone is building out their portfolios, why are core ETFs so appealing and what do they provide for client portfolios?
So diversification, liquidity, transparency, amongst a number of other benefits, but I'm going to focus on three other benefits that I think are relevant to this discussion for advisors. The first is performance. Second is low cost. And then the third is the familiarity of the indexes that they track. And so I'm just going to dive into each of those in order. So the first one about performance, I think a common misconception about core ETFs is that they deliver average to below average performance. And,
right.
And I think where this intuition comes from for most investors is that the market index represents the average of all investors' activities. If at best the index is average, once you take off things like fees, you are then automatically the third or fourth quartile of fund category performance. The reality, though, is actually dramatically different from that. We studied the five-year performance of our core ETFs across the major asset classes. So Canadian equities, US equities, emerging markets, international equities, fixed income and global equities, so six categories. In every single category, so 6 out of 6, our core ETF was in the first or second quartile of performance over 5 years.
That's amazing.
Right? So all of them are actually above average.
I wonder if we take it a step further now, Hale, and you know, when you think sitting in an advisor, from an advisor perspective, sitting in their chair, it's common to have a North American equity portfolio with individual equities. And how should advisors think now about making that transition to adding ETFs?
To your point, we run into lots of advisors who structure the equity side of their book as a single stock portfolio,
right,
using the recommended lists of their home offices. What's really nice about this is that the statement for the client looks beautiful, right? You've got 100 or 150 stocks to show your clients. It's a rich statement, lots of stories to tell your clients. I think the challenge that we find these advisors face is time, right? Like it's like a finely manicured front lawn, right? Like it looks great, but it takes so much time to maintain it. And so I'll give you examples. When money comes into the portfolio, there's a lot of time spent by these advisors just analyzing, you know, what do I buy? Right. Where am I underweight? Where am I overweight? What does my sector balance look like once I've done these purchases, right? And so time spent there is time sort of not spent with clients. And then on the way out, it's the same thing, right? Whether you're rebalancing into equities into fixed income, in which case you have to sell some of the equities, or maybe there's a larger liquidity event and you need to just sell down some of the equity portfolio. It's all that same math plus the complication of taxes, right? You're going to trigger some capital gains. Now you got to find some, you know, some losers to offset against the winners. And so again, it's all a bunch of time consumed on very sort of administrative portfolio management tasks.
Which you could just replace with adding some core ETFs.
Right. So what we find is not a total replacement of that portfolio, but we find a lot of advisors find success in adding what we call a liquidity sleeve of a core ETF.
And what do you mean by a liquidity sleeve, Hale?
Yeah. So it's like, imagine you have a 100 stock portfolio of US stocks. You just add 101st line of, say, our S&P 500 ETF.
Right.
And how this simplifies your life as an advisor is the following. Money comes in. There's no thinking involved. You just buy the S&P 500 ETF. Money goes out because you need to buy fixed income. You sell down that fixed income ETF. You avoid all of the calculation that you needed to sort of do in a pure single stock portfolio scenario. And the reason why this works so well is the benefits that we talked about before. It's going to be familiar on a client statement, so your clients aren't going to be alarmed by this 101st line. And then finally, you know, these advisors that structure their equity book this way, they're not accustomed to paying any fees for third-party management, right? It's a single stock portfolio. Yeah. They're the manager. Well, if you added like a 10% weight to an S&P 500 ETF, that would cost you in management fee less than 1 basis point a year, right? So this low-cost element is important.
Amazing.
For all that time savings, you're only paying under 1 basis point a year, and you get to free up all your time to spend with your clients.
Excellent answer, Hale. And I think, you know, when we look forward and we think about integrating the core ETFs, one of the questions that's really come up across advisors in Canada has been around Canadian Securities Administrators. They announced a total cost reporting. It doesn't come in effect into 2026, but as advisors think about this new regulation and it takes effect, how should they be thinking about adding ETFs to client portfolios?
Yeah. So if you're not following the regulations closely, I'll give a quick backgrounder to start. While you may have not have heard of total cost reporting, you're probably familiar with CRM2. So CRM2 came into force in 2016. Basically, what that required advisors to do is to show to their clients the fees and expenses associated with the services they're delivering to them, but specifically the fees and expenses paid to the advisor or the advisor's firm, things like trailing commissions, portfolio management expenses, account opening expenses, this type of thing. What was specifically excluded, though, was underlying product fees. So if you purchased a portfolio of managed money products like funds and ETFs, the MERs and the TERs of those products was not disclosed to your clients. So now, fast forward to April 2023. And to your point, Helen, the regulators here have finalized their rules on what's called total cost reporting. You can think of total cost reporting as like the sequel to CRM2.
Okay, got it.
They take everything that was in CRM2, and then they add the thing that they specifically scoped out, which was the underlying product fees. So now you have to show your client, again, in 2026, you'll have to start showing your clients all those sort of fees and expenses that were part of CRM2, plus all the underlying product fees. So the management expense ratios and the trading expense ratios of all the funds that you own for them. I think at the very least, so I don't know exactly how an advisor might react to that, but at the very least, I think it focuses their mind or your mind on fee budgets, right? Like
of course,
don't have like this unlimited budget to spend on sort of mutual funds and ETFs as you build a client's portfolio. because ultimately you're going to have to defend that in front of your client. Again, if you're concerned that maybe the mix of products you currently have in the portfolio is going to show a higher number than you're comfortable with, core ETFs, because of their low cost, become a very effective tool to sort of bring that fee down. And again, they carry all the benefits that we started this with, right?
So when we think about core ETFs, and I think you've made a very good argument in terms of just helping to lower total costs on the statement, given that this regulation doesn't come into effect until 2026, if you're an advisor listening to our discussion today, do you start or do you wait in terms of planning for this change effectively?
Yeah, it's a good question because I think 2026 feels a long way away. But if we've done some very illustrative math on this, if your number, say, is like 50 basis points, right, you want to show your clients about 50 basis points of underlying product fee, that will equate into roughly half your portfolio needing to be in core ETFs. If you've got nothing in there right now in core ETFs, then that's quite a bit of turnover. If you're a non-discretionary advisor, that's a lot of kind of paperwork to repaper all your clients to get them to that place. And so you want to give yourself enough time to get there. So starting early, I think, is always going to be prudent. But I think there's another really important reason why you should start thinking about it today. If you're a discretionary advisor, and actually it's quite easy for you to make such a massive shift in your portfolio, well, imagine you're making a 50% sort of reallocation of your portfolio into core ETFs. But now imagine that you've got an unrealized capital gain of about 20% in that 50% of your portfolio.
Right.
What that means is you're about to trigger a 10% capital gain on your clients. And so you really want to probably try to spread that out over as many tax years as possible. The truth is you only have two tax years,
right,
2024 and 2025, in which to do that. And so it's a good idea to start thinking about legging your way into that trade today.
So minimize capital gain, avoid tax shock with your end client.
Exactly right.
For advisors that have outsourced their international and emerging markets exposure to active managers, when we think about core ETFs with active mandates, how should advisors think about combining them?
Yeah, so at BlackRock, we are huge proponents of blending index and active, right? We think that to build a full, complete portfolio, you actually need all the ingredients. That includes index components and active components. The unintuitive thing we find about model builders that are building portfolios using entirely active is what they end up with actually is a very index-like looking portfolio. So you get advisors that think they're building a value-based portfolio, but then they add in sort of lots of Magnificent Seven stocks because they can't resist, and they end up with kind of a market portfolio, right? Or they own a certain selection of sectors because, you know, they think those are the winners, and then they add another active manager that basically re-adds in the ones that they are underweight, and they end up with a market portfolio. And so one of the reasons why we really like blending index and active is because, you know, unlike active plus active, which often equals index,
right,
index plus active usually means you're more deliberately expressing the market view that you want to express, right? You start with that sort of clean canvas of an index ETF, and then you deliberately express either a sector or a size or a factor view. And so the portfolio benefit of blending index and active is that you achieve your desired portfolio. But there's more to it than that. There's also what we find practice management benefits. And that boils down to two things. One, by blending index and active, you're reducing the overall cost of the solution to your client, which, as we just talked about, is becoming more and more important due
right.
to total cost reporting. And then finally, what we find with clients that start blending index and active is they reduce the number of active managers they're working with, focusing on sort of the good ones. And that saves a ton of time, right? They have fewer due diligence meetings with active managers. They have fewer performance reviews with clients about performance. And that time savings can be kind of redeployed to spending time with your own clients as an advisor.
So what I'm hearing is portfolio benefits, lower volatility, higher exposure to target sectors, and practice benefits, time saved, and lower costs.
That's right.
Hale, moving on now, when an advisor, and again, we talked a lot about the choice that's out there in market, what criteria should advisors use to evaluate core ETFs?
I think there's a lot of different criteria by which you can evaluate. So total fees is going to be important. The product structure, looking for withholding tax efficiency there. the exposure, the liquidity, partnering with a provider that does index ETFs for a living. It's not sort of a hobby, but actually a core part of the business. And then one that's, I think, often overlooked, and I alluded to this before, is the index that the fund tracks. I think we started to enter a world, at least in my mind, where a lot of core ETFs were getting looped together, and it almost didn't matter what index the thing tracked. It was like, well, it's a Canadian equity index, so like close enough. But I think the benefit that that overlooks is that familiarity component that I touched on at the beginning.
Right.
If you're an advisor, a lot of the value of owning a core ETF that tracks sort of the household name index is that it saves you time in explaining that extra line item to your clients. And so I know at iShares, we're very kind of focused on making sure we track sort of that institutional quality household name index. And that's actually the reason why, right? Because
right.
we're trying to save you time as an advisor.
Hale, what are some common misconceptions about core ETFs?
The most common misconception we have about core ETFs is something I alluded to earlier, is that they can only deliver, at best, average performance. And what the data would show is that this is just incorrect, right? Category after category, whether it's Canadian equities, US equities, international, emerging, or even bond categories, over longer periods of time, we find in each category, the core ETF pulls away from its peer group, as defined by its Morningstar category, in terms of performance.
Thank you so much, Hale. I think this has been a really insightful conversation about core ETFs. Certainly, I think from a benefit perspective, we've talked about performance, low cost, transparency, but also the importance of time. From a practice management perspective, being able to spend more time with your end clients by thinking about that whole portfolio lens of having both core ETFs and active together in terms of delivering for your clients. So thank you so much for this conversation. For more information about our core ETF suite or to access more ETF insights, please visit rbciShares.com. Thank you, Hale.
Thanks for having me.